First of all, I want to thank Mesa and Guy for putting this together. It's really great to be in a room full of people who want to spend the whole afternoon talking about the supply chain. It's what I've spent my last 20 years on, and it's great to be amongst friends. This panel's all about kind of getting into the dirt a little bit. We're going to talk about the supply chain. And because I think a lot of times we kind of gloss over it, it's the supply chain. And you get assets, you process them, you track them, you send them out. And we kind of forget that there's a lot going on there, and it's not always as pretty as just that quick little description. I was introduced to the supply chain. It's a little bit after Eric Iverson. I don't know if he's still here, but he talked earlier today about being at MovieLink. And that was in 2002. Back in 2006, I was at another company that was launching a video service on a gaming platform. And we were the first ones to do HD in a download format for long-form content. And I was in the business development team, and we'd licensed about 2,000 hours of content. And it was about a month before launch when we'd finished those deals. And we were like high-fiving and smoking cigars and drinking champagne because we were going to have this incredible launch of HD content on our gaming platform. And we'd outsourced all of the supply chain operations stuff because we don't want to get our hands dirty with that. And we're waiting for it to show up on our beta site so we could enjoy all this great content. And in fact, one of our colleagues here on the panel, Michelle, was working with me at her former company. And that's where we got introduced, actually. And so because it wasn't really showing up as quickly as we had expected, about a week before launch, I was dispatched out of the business development team and the high fivers and champagne drinkers to go down there and figure out what was going on. So I walked in, and I was surprised by a barrage of hard drives, spreadsheets, swirling vortex of digital assets that were just basically there. And it was literally impossible to figure out what we had, what we didn't have, things that we had that we didn't need, and to get anything up, even though most of it was there. Some of it was on a pallet full of HD cam videotapes that someone sent us. But most of it was there. The problem was figuring out how to get it through our supply chain. So that was my introduction to the supply chain. By the way, we launched with 100 titles out of our 2,000 hours of content after the most grueling death march I'd ever been on. And that was the launch of the Xbox Live Video Marketplace back in 2006. So that's the way the supply chain was back then. Hopefully now it's improved some. We've got some great colleagues here that are going to talk a little bit about the way it's working now. And so I'm going to start with Michelle. Actually, first of all, let's do introductions. Who are y'all? And tell us a little bit about your business. Paul.
I'm the owner and CEO of Here Media. We own Here TV, which is the largest LGBT television channel in the world. We have 250,000 plus paid subscribers on cable, satellite, and OTT in the United States, and some other 100-something thousand internationally. Our mission as a company is to empower our young people to realize that just because other people don't like them doesn't mean they can't run for president of the United States.
I don't think I'm going to get applause for my introduction. But my name's Cameron, here representing Fandango, and I'm also the chairman of the aforementioned OTTX organization. Fandango, most of you probably know, we interact with 60 million consumers every month through our various channels of people just trying to find something to watch, whether in theaters or at home. Some of our brands are Fandango, Rotten Tomatoes, Fandango Now, Flixster, and I run the Fandango Now business for us. And there's actually multiple supply chains within Fandango. There's really two and a half, I'd say. Fandango Now, which is our transactional video on demand service. And then we also do run a business called Fandango Movie Clips, which is the largest movie network on YouTube. And so we service, you know, billions of views literally over time. And so there's a supply chain there. And also we do produce short form original content basically in the name of finding consumers what to watch. So these are short form, what's in theaters this weekend, et cetera. That's all produced in-house in our facilities in Beverly Hills. And again, that has to be processed and encoded just like everything else on the other services, including Fandango Now. I do have a quick story of my version of your Microsoft story.
Oh, do tell.
Fandango Now is a product of acquisition. It was a smaller company called Emgo before that, and we were acquired by Fandango. And I came in as a consultant to Emgo, and I met with the content operations team there for the first time that ultimately ended up reporting into me. And I was just trying to understand the process, because I was not part of digital supply chain historically in my studio roles before that. And so I was just trying to ask questions like, how are you going to market? This was before launch, just like Eric's story. And so I sat down with somebody and said, so how are you figuring out what content to take in? And one of the content operations people said, well, she literally could not answer the question. And so I was like, well, I'm not challenging your process. I'm just asking what your process is. Like, so if it's Warner Brothers, are you taking the content in alphabetically or the most likely thing that you want to have on the platform first? So if you end up with 200 hours, they're the best 200 hours, or the ones you like? Like, what are you taking in? She literally panicked and could not answer the question. That is the beginning of a lot of OTT stories, whether you end up being one of the bigger players or, as Eric said, when we were preparing for this, there's a new one launching every 30 seconds. So I think we all go through that one point or another in our path.
It's a rite of passage.
So you know, applause. Told you.
My name is Lisa Romanoff, and I'm the president of Vision Films, and we are a supplier. We're a content supplier. We have about 500 titles in our library. And we release globally 2 to 4 titles every single month. So we're a real life example of what it takes to get the content in, get it ready, and then get it out on platforms like these. And we have such volume that we don't use a lab, but we do it in-house. And that has been a big learning curve, which we'll talk about later. And we're a medium-sized company. We have 10 employees. We have 2 in servicing, a full-time editor-type person, a IT-type person, and we also have to report to producers for as to where their content is and how much money we're making. So we have full-time accounting department, full-time marketing department for all the films we release, and also an international division, of which we originally licensed product, but now that a lot of the platforms are global, we're starting to test the waters, especially in the English world, and putting our films out globally.
Michelle?
Hey everyone, Michelle Edelman, sitting up here, first time in my new role, head of growth for Premiere Digital. We're a media services and technology solutions company. Little story to share about my role here. In 2010, kind of when everyone was launching all their stores, I had been going back and forth. I was still at Warner Brothers, going back and forth on the phone with a gentleman by the name of Eric Anderson, trying to get season 3, episode 2 of The Flintstones live on the iTunes store, and we could not get that one episode to go through. And he was calling me and saying, Michelle, it's not going through. We got to get this through. We got to finish that season. And, you know, all 10 years later, my look at my phone rings. It's Eric Anderson. He's still in there. I said, hey, I think I'm going to come work for you. So this industry is full circle, and there's a lot of people up here. Also, to note, I am a treasurer on the OTTX/EMA board. We all work together. We're very close. Things are evolving. I hope we're not launching OTT services every 30 seconds, because it would really take us down. Let's kick it off and talk about supply chain.
Thanks, Michelle. So earlier, Eric and Guy were having a conversation, and they mentioned that I think it was Eric had said that the workflows are like they're the same. You know, there's assets, they're getting tracked and stored, they're getting delivered, they get QC'd, they get processed, they get tracked and stored, and then they get published. And that's the way it was back in 2002, and it's kind of the way it is now. They mentioned that a couple of things have changed. One of them is we're deploying in all these places now that we didn't used to deploy. And then another one is the barrage of data that we're all having to deal with. I was thinking about that. Another one that actually is, I think, really interesting to think about is that there's, back in 2002, there was, it sounds like, maybe one over-the-top video provider, which was MovieLink. Now, last May, the stat I saw was that there were over 200 over-the-top video providers. So I don't know if it's every 30 seconds. Thankfully, it isn't. But that level of complexity that comes about by having that many providers in this space. Imagine if every single one of them has their own spec, and they probably do. You know, they may not even realize that that's not a good idea because their hair's on fire and they're going through their version of my and Cameron and Michelle's and everybody else's death march. So I thought I'd ask to start off with Michelle. Can you talk to us a little about, note to self, put phone on mute. Never fear, I have an Apple Watch. Michelle, can you tell us a little bit about that? We talked about the onboarding process. And so if I am starting a new channel, Eric's cocktail making channel, because I like making cocktails, what are some of the things that I might want to think about in terms of onboarding and getting that off the ground, and how are you thinking about it at Premiere?
Yeah, if you come to us as a service provider, let's say, we onboard you 100%. We make sure that, you know, we understand your spec, we understand all the assets that you're going to be bringing to us and how we get you set up. And then the question is, where are you getting your content from? Because you can't run a cocktail channel, Eric, unless you've got content.
Oh, so I have content.
You've got content. Okay. So, you know, essentially, we're in between. We sit in between, so we make sure that
My phone.
The destination we're sending to is set up for distribution, and the content coming through on the front end is set up to be set for distribution. So ultimately, we onboard on both sides. We onboard on the content side, and then we onboard on the distributor side so that the two shall meet in the middle.
Well, that makes sense. Okay, I want to back up then a little bit and talk to Lisa. We had a good conversation yesterday about your supply chain broadly. And you're getting, you've got a really, really broad set of distributors, basically everybody that is distributing content you're delivering to. So if you can tell us a little bit about the way your process works and some of the big issues that you're having.
Okay, well, first we have to get the content. So there's thousands of producers making independent feature films and documentaries, and they're delivering to us. So we use we use Signiant and Media Shuttle, and they can put their films, if they have the internet bandwidth, up on our server, or they send us a hard drive, and we have to sort through it. We have to QC it, and today's producers are just, in the digital world, they're not using a post-production facility and not doing post-production like they used to. They have absolutely no, they just send us their film when they think it's done, which it's not even close to being deliverable. So they send us a film, we QC it, and we kick it back. There's always mistakes. We have to QC the audio and the video and the M&E if we're distributing it internationally. And we kick it back, and this goes back and forth a dozen times. And we also talked yesterday a little bit about 4K versus 2K, because 4K is just to send 4K digitally through the internet takes so long. So we're still working in 2K, but when we kick it back, the producers are hopefully fixing their 4K version. And this goes back and forth until we think we have a deliverable master. And and then we still need to create a trailer, because their producers' original trailers are usually not releasable. And we have to create their key art, and we have to create then. So once we get in all the assets, we also have to know the specs of a dozen platforms. So we release a full spectrum across maybe a limited theatrical to all of the transactional VOD platforms, to all of the SVOD platforms, to all of the AVOD platforms eventually, and also sell to television. So we then have to turn around the films that we get and deliver it back out.
So how do you, I'm curious, how do you track? There's like a dozen different platforms. It's not 200 quite yet, but if there's a dozen of them, how do you keep track of, well, Amazon wants captions and subtitles for this type of content, and Google wants something else, and Apple's, how do you track all of that?
And it changes. As soon as we think we have down platform specs, they're going to send us a new metadata sheet, they're going to send us new specs, they're going to want new different images, and so it constantly changes. This is a full-time work for four people. It is a lot of work.
How do you track it?
How do we track it? We use Dropbox, which then we can keep a folder for and share it within our company of every single platform and their specs, and we save the emails as things change, and we save the people at each platform as they change too. Mm-hmm. So this is a constant process.
So it's this is the kind of thing that, like, this is really the supply chain. This is the way it really works. There's spreadsheets and four people. You know, this is the point where it's, you know, in some cases cost prohibitive to even launch on some of these platforms because of the cost just to get your content up there or to even test it to find out if it would work. Cameron, can you tell us a little bit about the way your supply chain works?
Yeah, we've had to grow up. We're only realizing probably this year, to be honest, that we've had to grow up a lot as far as supply chain is concerned and onboarding in particular, using that example. We probably have about 100 licensors, give or take, and take in content for each of those on a weekly basis. Probably in 2019, we took in about 5,000 movies and about 25,000 TV episodes, and about 100,000 overall cumulatively since inception. And when we sign a new deal, and because we have all the major studios now, most of the deals we sign tend to be independent studios, actually like Lisa, Vision Films. And but we've now creamed the top of that crop. And so we're kind of going down to the next echelon of content providers. And what we're finding is that we become the teachers and the educators and the trainers, because even though they may have successfully done a deal with one of the other competitors in our space, you know, be it iTunes or Amazon, et cetera, they're still learning what supply chain means to a distributor. And for the first time, we've made it a formal project in-house to have a formal onboarding process. We do have a formal onboarding process, but it wasn't well documented, and they couldn't refer back to the piece of paper, the PDF file that says, okay, these are your contacts, this is what you do, this is what you do first, this is the line you need to pass go after before it goes to the next step. And what we were finding is onboarding, where we would take in a small assortment of content from a provider. So you want their new releases, and then you'll take in kind of their perennial best releases that they've sold elsewhere. Let's say that's 100 titles. They would ask us, can we, instead of delivering those digitally, can we deliver that on a hard drive? We used to accept that. We were like, okay, just this one time. And that kind of set us up for failure, because then they would go for their next new release. Like, well, you said you could accept hard drives. Like, no, we didn't say we could accept hard drives. We said we would do it just that one time. So we don't do that anymore.
It's kind of like Neil Diamond was talking about earlier with cocaine.
So there's a formality to the onboarding, so we don't have to go through. So there, one other example is the EMA, the master file for what's that called? Because we're renaming it, so I don't know what we're
EMA
calling it.
EMA OTTX, Avail spec.
Avail spec. So it's a formal spec that everybody uses to in one way or another. But again, because the spec is a little different per retailer, that will bounce back and forth over time, and some of them have never even heard of it, even though they're doing business with people that require that spec. So we're formalizing that a lot lately, just so we can get people onboarded faster, get their content up, and allow them to monetize it quicker.
Yeah, and like Fandango, how long have you all been in the business, the TVOD business?
Yeah, all told only 7 years, so we're one of the younger players.
Still though, still... 7 years and still evolving and learning and improving on the supply chain stuff. So Craig Seidel, I don't think he's here anymore, but he's said numerous times we're always going to be talking about the supply chain. So if you're in it, you're probably in it. All right, Paul, can you tell us a little bit about your supply chain and some of the issues that you are seeing on your side as a smaller, very important and specific content provider?
Well, two things. First of all, come back to me later about I have a big idea for this crowd. Okay, when I was in, I got my MBA from Anderson at UCLA. And although I was in the marketing and entertainment department, most of my best friends were working in operations and supply chain. And the reason they were my best friends is because they were the smartest people at the business school, way smarter than the finance people who destroyed the economy in 08, who are my other friends. But this, I had a very interesting experience, and I'll get right back to your question, but I want to do this earlier. I had a very interesting experience as a publisher. I owned all the major LGBT publications in America for over 10 years. The Advocate, Out Magazine, Gay.com, et cetera. And what I realized is the operations and supply chain people were actually shaping that industry. They were actually, you think it's the business development people, you think it's the finance people. Actually, no. I watched how a supply chain-based company essentially changed all of publishing. So that is why I have an idea for everybody for later, because the same thing is going to be required now in the OTT space. Okay, so we'll come back to that later. But
you're such a tease.
Well, no, but no, just I have just huge respect for the people in this room. Like I said, they were always the smartest people in business school. And I know how bright they are, and I also know that this is a $1 billion idea for somebody. And who's not me. But anyway, to go back to supply chain. I started out as a cable company. So I had a cable supply chain first. And basically now we do that through Comcast Media Center. And Comcast Media Center delivers our on-demand programming to Comcast, Spectrum, and well, we're in every cable system and every satellite system in America. All of it is delivered by Comcast Media Center for us for the channel itself. Something I didn't mention in my introduction is that in addition to the channel, I own a 400-title LGBT library and a 300-title non-LGBT library. And by the way, that 300-title non-LGBT library is handled by Lisa, because she is awesome, the best, brilliant, honest, and a wonderful person. And that's why every time I have an independent filmmaker and they ask where I should go, I said, call Lisa at Vision right now, save yourself a lot of time and a lot of trouble, because this woman knows your stuff. So for my non-LGBT titles, basically Lisa is my supply chain, so her supply chain is my supply chain. But that's not entirely true, because we also work with the incredibly awesome BitMax people who have changed our lives in dealing with iTunes, in dealing with Google Play, in dealing with Vudu, and they do such an amazing job for us. Everything from placing our ad breaks to making sure that the quality of our delivery is letter perfect, so we never ever have a problem. So I am a major BitMax fan. Any BitMax people here? There we go. Yay, there's one. There we go.
They're
big,
smiling,
big,
Paul.
Big fans. And also, all my other friends who are starting channels, first of all, I tell them, raise more money. You don't have enough. And then I say, use BitMax. So I think for a channel operator and a content owner, the point I'm really trying to make is you need good partners.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something, actually, that I recall looking back to my days at one of my former employers that I mentioned. We are a software company, and we have tons of software developers and engineers at Microsoft, and it was important for them to be developing Microsoft software, and it was really hard to get them to develop software for my little operations team to make it easier for us to do our jobs, because they have, actually more important customer-facing work to do. And so the point I'm going to make is that it's really, really, we found it was really, really important to start looking to the folks in this room, to the service providers, because y'all have the expertise in this and the experience with it that a lot of us that are making services and making content, that's not really our job. We make content, or we make a platform to make it available. So it's something that this industry can play a really important part, I believe, in establishing the vision that we're all trying to create and for a much more streamlined and vibrant ecosystem. I guess I'm supposed to ask another question now. So
I have a name for your cocktail channel.
Yeah, exactly. If you weren't watching, if you're watching your cocktail channel so often, you know that.
It's called Peacock.
Ooh, I like it. All right, so let's go back to Michelle. Y'all see a lot of content coming in, going out. You're working with a lot of partners throughout the ecosystem. What are some of the maybe the trends that you're seeing as the industry is expanding so fast with new OTT players, new content? What are some of the things that you're seeing that are maybe problems, and what are some of the things that might be working?
Well, I'd like to talk about what's working as someone who's kind of seen supply chain for a number of years. And, you know, if anyone here is still working on spreadsheets, I suggest you get up and walk away now, because it should not be done that way anymore. I mean, we're dealing with so much content right now that we always say once you add a human to it, the percentages of mistakes that will happen are just going to become greater and greater. We run an automated system. You know, I walked into a company and they're like, "Here's what we do," and you've got to get your hands on some sort of portal or something where the customer is ingesting their content and all their information, and then you've got visibility watching it across, as it's going through processing, it's going through mastering. Like, if you're not doing that, you have to. We're at a pivotal point right now where there's just too much, and the chances of things being dropped on the floor or someone calling you up, that's their livelihood right there. So we run a really, really, really good comprehensive system that I said, when we onboard you, you get set up in this system, you become almost like a member, and you're in our portal, and what you see, we see. So when we're processing and putting all the content together to the output, you're seeing it as well. You know, I was on an email this morning where somebody said, "I see you're processing our content right now." I was like, "Yes, we are. We are doing that." So you see what we see. There's no spreadsheets. It's running through a system, and everything should be running through systems today. So that's what we're seeing today that's working. What's not working are spreadsheets. We need to get off of them. You know, you and I were doing them, Xbox and Warner, years ago. If everyone's still on them, that's a problem.
Well, and I think if you are Eric's great cocktail channel, that's probably how I'm tracking stuff, right, is on a spreadsheet. And what you don't realize is that that's never going to fix itself. You know, it's never going to be a good time to find the right solution to that. And so, starting down that path, I'm joking about my cocktail channel. I could probably handle it on a spreadsheet. But as, many of the platforms in the space are getting bigger, they really, my feeling is that it's it potentially really inhibitive. And, I think it's, for this industry to be able to succeed, I think it's really important for the technologists that are building solutions to build solutions, understand their customers, their potential customers, and build solutions that scale for them. Lisa, I want to change the subject just a little bit. So we were talking earlier, you mentioned that you're newly into the AVOD space, and I don't know that much about AVOD in terms of the supply chain, and I'm wondering if you could maybe just tell us a little bit about some of the specific challenges that you're encountering on the AVOD side.
From a content distribution point of view, being able to exploit content that was in your library, AVOD has just been a heaven for us. Tubi came along and embraced us and took in a few hundred titles, and they were one of the first AVOD channels that I saw results that I got huge checks. And they also made the onboarding process to send them product very, very easy. And it was that, okay, can we, if we're delivering this many titles, can we send you hard drives and can you ingest it and do it? But now that we're on a regular flow, we're uploading directly into their portal. But there's new other platforms that are now saying, well, do you have an MRSS feed to deliver to us like Zumo? And we're saying, no, we don't. You know, can't we just use Aspira, or can't you take a download link, or can't we have a direct line into your portal? And they're saying, no, we don't have the team that can ingest on our side. So then we need you to just send it to us ready to wear. And there's other platforms that are asking for other materials that we don't have, and saying we have closed captions in SCC, and they're saying, oh, we need an SRT. Whatever it is, every single platform has something else that they want, different image sizes. So if we're trying to put up 200-300 titles, it's taking a long time to prepare the assets to deliver to those platforms. But from a content perspective, the AVOD has opened up a brand new world for all of our library, and it's titles that are no longer selling because they've already gone through their TVOD and their SVOD platforms, and it's just dropping off, and now they're on AVOD, and the sales are shooting back up again. So it's great for the content owners of this product because their product has a whole new life. And I think of it like almost like television, like free television, because there are a lot of diginets out there as well, which we do sell to. But if once you're past the premium pay TV window, then who else is there to sell to? ABC, NBC, CBS is not taking our independent products. So there's Lifetime and Hallmark, and Sci-Fi is very, very specific. So there's no channels to put your product on, and this has just opened up a whole new world for us. I would like to go to talk about what Michelle was saying. She's got an automated system, which is fabulous, and it costs a lot of money. It was custom built for them. So, but from an independent point of view, we are using spreadsheets because in order for us to keep track of 400 films across 30 or 50 platforms. And then every single film has a different naming scheme or a different number, has a different price point, has a different date that went live. There's just so much data that we need to track as suppliers that there is not a perfect automated system out there. We use FilmTrack when we do licenses, which has been fabulous. And Rightsline has a system that you can customize for yourself and create it, but there's nothing that's ready made, and even reporting out to producers, there's nothing that is ready made that is really available.
We should talk.
Available.
Yeah, I was just going to say y'all should talk.
But then the cost becomes potentially prohibitive, and that's
so. This is a great example. This is the way it really works. There really are spreadsheets. There really is four people and people's hair on fire. So we got it out there. That's the truth about the supply chain, folks. So I want to actually turn it over to Paul real quick, because you have a recommendation for us that's going to change our world and make someone $1 billion. And so get out your pens, take notes.
I'm talking right to you. No, and I'm kind of serious about this. And I'm going to frame something as a problem, but I don't want you to hear the problem. The flip side of every problem is an opportunity, okay? So what I'm really presenting is an opportunity, not a problem. But I'm going to start out with the problem. Okay. After producing over 100 movies, winning some of them, won some Oscars and stuff, I became a publisher 10 years ago. Okay. As a publisher, our business was rocked by a company called Comscore, which basically, because of a supply chain company, all right, on some level, because they were supplied, it was the data, the information you needed to give to your advertisers, the money. Because remember, this all starts with the money. You know, but everything you do, every single thing we've talked about, ultimately equals revenue. Lisa's not doing this so she can make spreadsheets. Lisa likes money a lot. So she's not doing it for that reason. Everybody likes money. Almost everybody. Maybe not Bernie. But anyway, but almost everybody. So the idea is there a way that we can empower content providers so that they can make a lot more money? Okay, what Comscore did is it created the basis for every publisher in America. All of a sudden, and it happened fast, Remember, Nielsen was everything. Nielsen, Nielsen, Nielsen. Nielsen got their ass handed to them by ComScore. Because some of you smart people, some smart people in this room, designed a different, better system and then were able to sell it to every major publisher in the country. And from that day on, every advertiser I dealt with, and I sold $50 to $60 million worth of advertising a year, every year for 10 years. What was my KPI for them? First of all, they wouldn't even talk to me if my ComScore rating wasn't a certain level. I had whole big companies. I had to constantly build my ComScore just so I could get Tiffany, Hermes, and some of my, you know, hoity-toity advertisers. Most of mine are pretty hoity-toity, unfortunately, which means they're all high maintenance. But and then at the end of the day, when you were serving their campaigns, you had to do. Everybody wanted it to be double verified. Everybody wanted to see what the ComScore was for their piece of custom content. Essentially, it defined the entire publishing industry. I view OTT as publishing. Okay, that's the first thing. I became a publisher because I said movies are no longer going to be distributed. Movies are no longer going to be sold. Movies are going to be published. And that's what we're really talking about here. We're publishing movies onto multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So someone is going to have to design for this new video publishing business that we used to call the distribution business a supply chain solution that deals with revenue in a realistic way. So bear with me while I try to explain that. Right now, when you put your piece of content up on a platform, first of all, they all account for it in different ways. That's not great, okay? It should be standardized. Basically, everything should be transparent. Everything should be standardized. That's what ComScore did with data. Everybody saw it, knew when it was. You could do business. So right now, people say, oh, here's the money you earned off of your content. But what does that really mean? Do you really know what they sold that ad for? Do you really know the CPM? Do you really know what share of that CPM you're getting? Do you really know that you're being accounted to fairly? Do you? Some big platforms don't even do it that way. They don't even tell you that much information. They don't even tell you an eCPM. They'll just say, here's your number. And then there's other people who say, well, we're going to pay you by minute played. And by the way, if you do really well, we're going to keep reducing what we pay you so that we can pay you less and less and less over time. So what is the solution? The solution is somewhere in the supply chain needs to be someone who really understands advertising revenue and how it works, okay? And is able to track it for Lisa and for everyone else who has content out there so that she's not having to do spreadsheets to do this. And I don't know of any supply chain solution right now that is really set up to essentially deliver revenue information in a meaningful way. So, and it's complex because a lot of people are getting their ads through these, you know, ad stacks, this programmatic ad stacks. Programmatic ad stacks are kind of a big ripoff because your advertiser's paying up here. They're paying a $40 CPM up here. And somehow, by the time it gets to, and I don't mean it to call them out, but just for example, Tubi's now getting a $5 CPM, and then they're somehow splitting that
hey,
with
Paul,
you.
Hey, Paul, forgive me, but I think I'm going to have to ask that you finish this conversation over beers, wine, or something stronger, because I think we're at time.
Oh, I'm sorry, but you're really pushing the cocktails. We may have a substance issue here.
Oh, we do.
It's my fault, Paul. It's my fault. Don't blame Eric. It's me.
It's his fault. My drinking problem is Guy's fault.
Anyways, you're right. We are out of time. Paul, that was a great last word. Thank you so much for the panel, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
that
you.
Was great. Stick around. We're gonna have the pita pit here with the next session. And if my panelists for the next session will please come up and join me at the stage.